The Week 10 Horsing Around podcast. Last week we were at the palatial, exquisite iHeart Studios. This week we are in the bunker that is shared by iHeart and NFL Network and sometimes ESPN and occasionally a few other people here at the UC Health Training Center. From this little room, what is it? I'd say about 24 square feet, 30 square feet, I'm not sure. A lot of interviews and transmissions go out to the world. And actually, when we bring you press conferences on Orange and Blue 760, it all goes through machines in this room before it comes out live to you. I'm Andrew Mason of Orange and Blue 760 and DenverBroncos.com, joined as always by the esteemed host of our morning show, 7 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time, Andy Lindahl. Andy, pleasure as always.
I'm more the monkey. Tyler's esteemed. I'm just the guy that, like Toons is the cat, should not wreck the car.
Have you wrecked the car, though?
That's
the thing. Yeah.
You've heard the show.
I've been in the studio. I would say sometimes I walk in and the car's already in the ditch and we're trying to get the thing out.
You, I think, got into the car today as we were veering towards the side of the road.
And then I yanked it further the side of the road.
Well, yeah, it's not fun if we don't have at least one or two wrecks a show, like this podcast.
Last week, I mean, it was a wreck from the start. The Cheech Mason, we went through the characters in my head, in my closet, call it what you were. We rallied them off. We introduced a new one on Thursday on Orange and Blue 760. We found Oscar, a grouchy fellow, back there, actually hung up on us.
Yeah. Oscar was a little bit short-tempered.
We wanted to know why Kansas City was ranked 10th, down from 4th in the power rankings, and Oscar hung up the phone. And I'm going to blame Oscar for the fact that my little Carolina Panthers souvenir pseudo NASCAR car that I had on display in my office was for some reason lying in the garbage can.
Yeah,
last night
we found out there's an irrational side deep somewhere down inside of Mace, and his name is Oscar. Let's hope he doesn't come out too often.
Irrational, I thought Cheech was irrational.
No, Cheech is the guy that keeps you balanced, we found out.
Chemically
enhanced.
It
drives your hunger.
Yes. Well,
we also got into your five cheesesteak affair over
it's
the weekend.
It's four.
And I think it's not. So you've got to stop with this.
The chicken Philly is not a cheesesteak.
Yeah, well, the chicken Philly still counts because it's still that same bread.
But where's
the bread is where you're going wrong.
Where is the steak in a chicken Philly?
Chicken steak.
It's chicken. It's not steak.
It's a Philly.
Steak is
Did you
red
have
meat.
The bread?
Yes.
Did you have the cheese?
Yes.
Was there grease
so
part
it's
of it?
Cheese, but with chicken. So it's a cheese and chicken sandwich, a chicken Philly, but not a cheese steak.
You just need to understand that the calorie count off the charts.
I'm sure. That's why I walked a lot.
So you keep telling me that you walked a lot. I don't know that the walking is going to cancel out Philly
cheesesteaks. 20,000 steps a day.
Did you have side items with all said cheesesteaks?
The only side item I went with was when I crossed the street in South Philly after having my cheesesteak over at Jim's, which I put one half notch behind Tony Luke's as the best I had on the trip. Like, I would go to Tony Luke's and Jim's again and again and again. But across the street from Jim's on South Street in Philadelphia is a place called Smoke's Poutinerie, which is, as it turns out, a chain that is all across Canada and is making inroads into the U.S. I found out they actually have a location in Amalie Arena. They put one in, I think, last year, home of my beloved Tampa Bay Lightning. I just became aware of this, and now the next time I go down to Tampa for a Lightning game, I have to go. I'll see the Lightning, of course, when they come up to Colorado in December. But poutine, a dish from Quebec, French fries topped with brown gravy and cheese curds. And now there's, like, modifications to it. People are putting meat on it and so forth. It's terrific. It's a great late-night food, post-drunk food, as it were. And I'm amazed it's not made inroads in the U.S. more than it has. It seems like, Andy, think about it. French fries, cheese curds, and gravy. Doesn't that seem completely in the wheelhouse of the American palate?
Yeah, we probably don't want to encourage that. I think we got enough heavy people walking around without encouraging any more caloric intake. We're not allowed large Diet Cokes in New York City anymore.
Diet now, Cokes.
You want to go ahead.
Not, I mean, not even regular, but diet. They're limiting the diets now.
They don't like anything.
Wow.
If it's large, it's not for them.
Portion control. Although I did have the small poutine portion at Smokes in Philly, and it was terrific. And that was my only side dish with the cheesesteaks.
There were no, what is it, cheese balls, as they say? Is that a Jersey thing?
Fries. I mean, I saw some cheese fry concoctions on the menus at these places, and they looked terrific, but I was trying to stay on point. I was trying to maximize my cheesesteak intake, and I did not have room for many side dishes, but I had to try the poutine.
Well, I'm glad it worked out for you. I, of course, worked with the Colorado Mammoth. That's indoor lacrosse, which has a number of Canadian players. Yes. That's where I first learned of this little delicacy of theirs, or late-night snack, as you put it. It's sort of their Taco Bell, if you will.
It's tremendous. But then again, I love many things that are Canadian. I think it's because my father is from the U.S., my mother is from Britain, and Canada's kind of the halfway in between the two.
Well, and culturally. It explains your love of Bryan Adams tunes, which I couldn't understand, but now I know.
Little Cuts Poutine. Like a Knife is one of the great underrated rock songs.
You were hammering down the Philly to Summer of 69 and someone else's rented car.
Actually, on this trip, it was a lot of Hall & Oates for the, you know, Philly soul sound, as it were, at least the their version of the Philly soul sound. I was actually listening to Hall & Oates on my headphones as I was walking or doing my walking tour of the city. I wanted the full Philly experience.
Did Maneater come up? Did
yes.
Maneater get in that mix?
All of the classics. Maneater, you know, One on One, Sarah Smile, their remake of You've Lost That Love and Feeling, even the obscure Possession Obsession, where John Oates sang lead.
Well,
Daryl Hall let John Oates have a go. It didn't do very well on the charts, as I recall.
People can't tell. This podcast is avoiding talking about the game right now because that was a that was about as good as Putin looks coming out the other way.
My wife asked me how the trip was, and I said, well, until about 1 o'clock Eastern time on Sunday, it was terrific.
Andrew, what do you think happened there? I will be honest with you. I was surprised by the outcome. I had told Tyler Palumbis, now we've got a hashtag blame Andy. So those on DenverBronco.com, go ahead and blame me for problems. Blame me for the loss. I had told Tyler Palumbis that morning, I had a good feeling about the game. Blame Andy. I shouldn't have had a game.
I had a good feeling too.
I just don't know where, now, you know, my good feeling came from, I thought that this offense was going to control the ball better. I mean, Brock had made it clear in last week's press conference, not turning over the ball, was his top priority.
Ball security is job security. That was his quote.
Famous quotes, right, that will now go down probably from this point forward like it is what it is. But, and I think on one of the interceptions, not necessarily all his fault, Demaryius Thomas is paid to make sure the defensive back does not get a jump nor gets in between the quarterback and the receiver. So a number of things went into why things went sideways last week. But why, in your opinion, why did that happen? What happened last week?
Well, let's start with that interception. And I talked about this with Ryan Edwards and Steve Atwater on Thursday morning as we were talking about what the Broncos need to do to try to beat the Patriots. And yes, we're going to get to the Patriots here. So just hang in there, everybody. But the reason I was on that interception was you've had a spate of early game turnovers. And you're behind 10-3. The Eagles had some momentum. Their offense was doing things to keep the defense off balance. He'd already had the play action off the zone read that caught Aqib Talib a little bit flat-footed, that Carson Wentz hit Alshon Jeffrey for the touchdown. So you had that going against you. You had the penalty against Garrett Bowles on the first series that had knocked you back and kind of gotten things off kilter. So a potential touchdown drive had gone for a field goal. So some things were already going against you. But when you had that interception, you just felt the air really come out of the team at that point. That was the one thing they couldn't afford. And in the last three games, when you've had that early giveaway, the A.J. Derby fumble against the Chargers, the Jamal Charles fumble, and then the Simeon to Hyerman interception in Kansas City, and then the interception there that Osweiler threw, intended for Demaryius Thomas, the dread, the sense of, here we go again. And I think the thing that got me was when that interception happened, that was when the snowball really started to roll down the hill and become the Avalanche. Because right after that, you had the Eagles' second touchdown, and that was that little third down pass to Corey Clement. And you had four defenders that were in position to where they could have stopped him potentially before he got to the sticks, let alone got to the end zone. Two offensive linemen, four defenders. The math is usually in your favor there, and Clement still kind of found his way through. You know, you had Bradley Roby with an angle that wasn't quite what you wanted getting in there. He would have been in position to make the play, and Clement just kind of got through. And I remember seeing that play setting up as it happened and thinking, okay, I think the Broncos will get the stop because they've got the numeric advantage and they've got guys coming through. And he found his way through, and my initial reaction was, how? But I think part of it was the sense that, man, another turnover. It's happening again. And then it just, that snowball gets rolling down the hill, becomes an avalanche, it gets out of control. And then you see, at the end of the day, a result of 51-23 that, frankly, the game wasn't as close as the score indicated. It could have been worse.
Yeah, it was a tough weekend, no doubt. That was a tough game to watch. I guess what was so hard for me, and we always get some interesting responses when we post the podcast, and we had a particular blogger out there, right, that he thought it was going to be a dumpster fire, and I told him, I think you're going to be surprised, but I made that comment on the strength of,
yeah,
I thought our defense was going to, I guess, have another performance like the Kansas City performance, where the offense wouldn't get untracked, and I thought we'd see a more conservative brand of offense that just would keep this thing kind of close. I was expecting maybe even a boring game, I guess, going in there where neither offense does much, but it's a defensive battle, and maybe 30-some points is scored total, much less one team well exceeded.
It needed
that
to be that way for the Broncos to win, and the score I predicted was 17-13, knowing that if the Broncos were going to win the game, it had to be around there. And then looking up at the end of the first quarter and seeing 17-3, in my mind, I knew this is going to probably be ugly. You didn't know how ugly. Even then, I wasn't thinking 50-plus. But you knew it was going to be bad at that point because that was exactly the kind of game the Broncos could not afford to be in, one where they were multiple scores behind, having to play catch-up, and already were minus one in turnovers. And there they were. At the same time, they did have a couple of chances to get back in and make it interesting, but a couple of, you know, Isaiah McKenzie had the 44-yard return, but couldn't do anything on that drive after that, had to settle for a field goal. And then kind of the final nail in the coffin sequence was getting into the red zone again. A nice drive, I thought, but having to settle for the field goal and make it 24-9 rather than 24-13 or potentially 24-14 if you'd gone for two and gotten it. That, when they couldn't get a touchdown on that series, that was when, in my mind, where I thought, this is probably going to get out of hand. And then on the next series, you had Ajayi taking off into the open field. Huge hole to the left side. One Eagles offensive lineman able to take out two Broncos defenders. Just a mess. Just a messy performance. And you wonder if for the defense, after, like, kind of like a rubber band almost, stretched and stretched and stretched and stretched week after week after week, and finally it just snapped.
Yeah, I for me, people want to talk about, you know, the word quit has been tossed around. I don't know that I saw a team that quit, but I don't think the same fire was there. Maybe that doesn't make sense to people. But to me, this defense has done a tremendous job of keeping the pilot lit there, the pilot light going, and continuing to be intense even when it looks like the offense wasn't having their best day.
And it can be tough to keep that intensity. I think one of the things that you had to admire about this defense during the first three games of the losing streak that the Broncos are on right now was the ability to keep that intensity in the second half, even when you're behind two scores and you're bouncing around out there after plays and between snaps. And it looks like they're in the Super Bowl ahead in the second half rather than behind two scores in midseason at Los Angeles or Kansas City. But then again, it's a different animal being down three or four scores than being behind two scores. And also, the Eagles doing so many things to kind of keep you off balance early. Give them credit for some of the things in their offensive game plan. And certainly Carson Wentz, I think if you've got to name a midseason MVP, I think he's the guy. So they're doing some things that they deserve credit for. But at the same time, certainly an un-Bronco-like performance on defense. And now, going forward, I'm sure you'll see teams try to mimic what the Eagles did. Now, not every team has the talent or the ability to tweak its scheme to mimic certain elements of the Eagles' game plan, but they're going to try to borrow because of things that worked. And so the Broncos may have to adapt a few things to counter as teams borrow from that game plan. So the next few weeks could be interesting to see if this was the start of something or just an aberration. We won't know, I think, for a few weeks whether this was a demarcation point for a defense or just the aberration in an otherwise strong run of performances. We'll take some time to find that out.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I don't quite know what to expect. I do know this. I don't know that I always agree with the coach speak of what Bill Belichick likes to say. I don't think you're going to see another Bronco defensive performance like this. There's
they won't give up seven touchdowns in a game again. That's one. I'll say that. I mean, that's clear. That sort of thing. That sort of performance is a complete anomaly and outlier. But can they get back to allowing only 1.2, 1.3 touchdowns per game? That's the question. Because if they're not at that point with the offense struggling, it's tough to see this team getting back on track.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I will say this. None of us expected it to look as ugly as it did Sunday for a myriad of reasons. But I'm also going to throw in there that, you know, the disappointing part of the last 4 weeks, unfortunately, hasn't necessarily been this three-game road trip in my mind. We all knew this was going to be a killer. It was the Giants game you lost before you started the three-game trip. It was what you showed up with in L.A., we knew this three-game stretch was going to be tough. And the way things set up, if you can find some sort of – I don't even care if you win the game on Sunday against the Patriots. If you can have a performance to feel good about, if you can get the offense going a bit, you can get the defense going a bit, even if you lose the game with Cincinnati. Now, Oakland looks like they've had a little bit of a rebirth with the Kansas City win. That team looks like they're getting together a little bit, but we'll find out. But it's Miami, which is a mess. The Jets
getting together on offense. I don't think they've got their defense together.
Right. My point being, the time to make a run is still ahead of the Broncos. They've got to make it happen. And the margin for error is as thin as our fingernails.
And
but
the thing is, that Giants game, to me, it's still hanging over the Broncos. Because I thought you had to be 4-1 after that Giants game just in case you went 0-3 on this road trip, which to me was always a possibility because it's tough to go three games in a row, and then you might have lost that game to New England. So in the back of my mind, I was thinking, okay, if you're 4-1, you could go 0-4 on this run, and it would be frustrating, it would test you, but you still would have an opportunity to rebound on the backside and get on a run and get where you want to go. But because of that Giants loss, you put yourself in a position to where you had to steal one game that you weren't expecting to get. You couldn't do it in LA, which, you know, maybe that was probably 50-50. That was a toss-up going in. You couldn't do it in Kansas City. You couldn't do it in Philadelphia. And now here, this is one I think you have to steal to make up for that Giants game. 4-5 isn't great, but with what you have left on the backside, Cincinnati, 3-5. Oakland, 4-5. Miami, 4-4. The Jets, 4-5. The Colts, 3-6. Washington, 3-5 or 4-4, because they came back to beat Seattle. And then Kansas City at the end. But that's at home, and maybe Kansas City has wrapped things up. You have a stretch where you have some games you can win. Of course, right now the Broncos form, those teams are saying, hey, we can beat the Broncos. That's the reality of where you sit right now because of this skid.
Yeah, and your steals are New England and Washington. Those are your steal games, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the two you have to steal with no mistakes, as you said. Now, the good news is the Oakland Raiders play the Patriots after this one in Mexico City. So hopefully they're worn out, even though it's their home game. Hopefully they're not feeling so right after that. Because for those that don't know, Mexico City higher in altitude than what Denver is in altitude.
By about 2,000 feet, I believe.
Yeah, so that could wear out Oakland a little bit. Miami just seems like a hot pile mess right now. I don't know what they're going to be. I mean, their offense, unfortunately, is sharing the same struggles as Denver's offense. You watched that game the other night, and every time Miami got something going against Oakland, there was a hold. There was a penalty. It looked just all too familiar to what the Broncos have been suffering through the last month of the season. No explosive plays. Any explosive plays, you know, accompanied by a penalty that takes it back. And Miami's defense looks like they're absolutely ready to revolt as well. So I don't know what's going to happen there. Now, the Jets are intriguing because when the Jets were on national TV, wasn't it Thursday night? And I can't remember, were they playing the Bills? They were playing the Bills, and the Jets, as they said during the broadcast, looked like the sack exchange, the New York sack exchange from back in the day with Klecko and Gastineau in the bunch. So I don't know that we're going to see that same sort of ferocity out of that front four when they come to town, but we know the Broncos are struggling through some offensive line issues, which got even worse this week for those that missed the news, with Menelik Watson going on IR. Donald Stevenson is going to give it a go, but we're recording this podcast at a point where we're still not quite sure what his game status is going to be.
And, you know, Alan Barber, they used him against Los Angeles a few weeks ago, and he struggled. And with Menelik Watson struggling in pass protection at times, but was doing well as a run blocker.
The right side was the way you went when you needed the must-have yards on a run.
When you needed 4 or 5 yards on the ground, you went to that side. He was doing some good things as a road grader in the run game, which is what you hoped for from him coming in. And he was playing better the last few weeks, even though he was struggling with the calf injury that cost him the Chargers game and half of the Giants game. And so compounding that, of course, is Billy Turner being on injured reserve. They signed Cyrus Quandijo, a former second-round pick of the Bills who's had some injury issues in recent years, but that's not something that's going to help you right away. You bring him in for depth, you get him out on the practice field, see where he stands health-wise, but that's not. But Quandijo's probably not going to be in the mix this week. So you're talking about Stevenson if he's healthy. You're talking about Barber. It's not ideal to lose Menelik Watson, but you've got to deal with it. You've got to find a way to muddle through here. And if Barber's on that side, that means Max Garcia goes back to playing every down. Now, every team's dealing with something right now. But I would say, even though Menelik Watson doesn't have a Pro Bowl pedigree, to me, he's one of the players you could least afford to lose.
Yeah, because you have enough problems over there as it is, and now you're back to Alan Barber. There's a part of me that wonders, and maybe this isn't ideal, maybe it's just a dumb suggestion at this point, but we all know Ronald Leary likes to be a left guard. At what point do you think about going left guard with Ronald Leary, right guard with Connor McGovern, trying to get that physical presence on both sides? Mm-hmm. Maybe Max is the swing guy at that point. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. Like you said, none of this is ideal, especially this time of year, and everyone's just trying to figure it out. I guess we'll see how it looks against the Patriots. The other thing that I've got to get your opinion on, because I haven't had a chance to ask you during our time on Orange and Blue 760, and I know how your partner feels. I understand that likely had Vance Joseph challenge the Emmanuel Sanders catch, he would not have won the challenge. I certainly mm-hmm. understand why the coaching staff would have told him after what happened in Buffalo, he simply was going to the ground and the ball came out. Do not challenge that. I get that. I have said during the week, had I challenged anything, it would have been a desperation challenge in full admission, hoping that they saw something different to just mm-hmm. try to get some momentum going off that long punt return that you needed. A game that was 17-3 at the time, you and I both know, that becomes a one-score game.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, just maybe, Philly starts thinking, have we squandered a good half?
Mm-hmm.
Have we let these guys find some life? Where I'm frustrated, Andrew, where I think the competition, where I hope the competition committee takes a look at this thing, I feel like if a guy willingly goes to the ground or dives or does anything in an attempt to catch a ball, that's where the standard of coming up and going through the catch and to the ground should be held up. I think in Emmanuel Sanders' case, where a catch was made and a tackle was in progress and two steps have been taken and a knee has hit the ground, just like on the goal line, because we had the kid that the backup tight end that basically lost the ball, caught it in his legs, mm-hmm. his knee hits in the end zone, and somehow that in real time is more a catch than what Emmanuel did, you've got to relook at this stuff.
And I think the wording on the touchdown, when Gene Steratore emerged from watching the replay, he said the call stands. He didn't say it was confirmed.
Nothing was confirmed.
So whatever the call was initially was going to be what stood. And it just stunk for the Broncos that the initial call happened to be a touchdown. With the Emmanuel Sanders catch, no catch, I get where you're coming from, but at the same time, you can't waste a timeout. You already had burned a timeout on the second play of the game because you had 12 men lining up in the line of scrimmage.
I'm not knocking the coach at all. I get where they came from. What I'm asking you is that the spirit of the rule? Called Emmanuel Sanders, is that truly the spirit of the rule when a guy is... He didn't dive to make the catch.
Maybe
he secured the catch while running.
Maybe something needs to be discussed where you say, okay, for a long time we've had this principle that the ground cannot cause a fumble. Maybe it needs to be that the ground cannot cause an incompletion as well.
Well, or if a defender punches it out, then that's not your fault. You know what I mean? I'm with you there. I mean,
I think this is something that's hurting the game. I think it's hurting the appeal of the game to fans. That you're seeing something that looks like a catch by any reasonable standard for anyone who's ever played even backyard football, let alone middle school, high school football. But because of the rules and the way they're written, it's not a catch. And the review, as Vance Joseph said, he talked to his guy upstairs. It was he said, I think it was the analytics guy that would be Mitch Tanny upstairs, and was told not to challenge it. And I think it was a good call intellectually not to challenge it because I think they would have lost the challenge. But I do think they need to review this rule, and that's why I say have the fumble standard maybe that if the ground can't cause a fumble, why is it possible for the ground to cause an incompletion? And this certainly would put the week 3 play in Buffalo. That would have been a game changer.
Yeah, I just think there's a better way to interpret these things because I 100% think that you're absolutely correct. First off, again, I'm not knocking the staff. Dave Logan told me in the building they would have lost that challenge.
Yes.
Everybody in the building. And again, I want to make sure everybody knows because Tyler Columbus had said it to me. Vance Joseph did not get a video replay. The Eagles knew that it would probably be at least close.
That's why it has to come from upstairs because they can at least see the television broadcast.
Right. Vance was blind. That's why he's relying on his guys. I mean, another rule we could do is hand him the iPad and let him look at the replay. We have those iPads in effect.
I hate the resistance to technology.
Yeah, and if you're going to start using them anyway. But my point,
go all the way.
Well, you might as well. Yeah. You're halfway there. Andrew, my point, though, is to me, that is a catch with the naked eye. We've got to revise the rule. And you know what? You're asking the impossible of the refs. I don't even think they know what they're supposed to call anymore. I'll be honest with you. The touchdown catch, I think the reason why the guy ruled it a touchdown, I honestly believe, I don't know if I could get a ref to admit this, they know in the back of their head if they get it wrong, it's going to be reviewed because it's a score.
Exactly.
So just get the free review and call it a touchdown.
Call it a touchdown initially or on the field. If it's a fumble, not a fumble, call it a fumble initially because all turnovers are subject to instant replay.
And people can say, and I understand, John Elway said it, Van Joseph has said it, the leadership of this organization has said it. You got to overcome the mistakes. I don't disagree with that, and you have to have that kind of that attitude.
We're not blaming the officials here.
But here's the thing.
Because when you lose by 51-23 score, it's about more than the refs.
You're absolutely right.
Far but
nonetheless,
more.
Nonetheless, I do think games are about momentum. And when a team is ending a three-game road trip, you need any little glimpse of hope to keep fighting when you've gone from a Monday night game to an East Coast game, and we don't know what kind of momentum a first down right there gives them. We just don't know.
And this team has no margin for error right now.
Right. So
it was a slim path to victory, and when you have stuff like that, it closes it further.
I just think, as you said, in the fans' mind, they know what's a catch. And when something like that gets overturned, that's where people get frustrated. So, for whatever it's worth.
Well, I'm sure come back to this at some point before the end of the season, because something tells me in the next seven games, this subject is going to come up, since it's already come up twice. In the first eight more to go. Yeah, I said seven games left. Tells you how off I am. I'm Andrew Mason. This is Andy Lindahl. Thanks for joining us this week on the Horse and Around Podcast.